Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, we're done with the Spotavad. Any questions about it? About Spotavad?
Can I?
Yes.
I just see if I understood that very, very quick recap. Is that the Spotavadis, they say there's the phonemes, and then from the phonemes comes the Spota, and then from the Spota comes the understanding of the meaning.
Well, yeah.
So the phonemes reveal the Spota, and the Spota reveal the meaning. And then the
that's actually the other theory. They're against that theory. You know, if they were saying the phonemes reveal the spota, then the power is in the phonemes. But they're saying the power to reveal the meaning is not in the phonemes. It's only in the spota.
But what reveals the spota?
Spota reveals itself. That's why it's called an explosion.
I mean, because these exact words were your words. The phonemes reveal the spota, and the spota reveal the meaning.
Well, let me see where that is.
I mean, you said that.
Oh, yeah. Reveal the spota. Well, yes, the phonemes, this is what it says here in the translation. The phonemes perceived in sequence revealed the spota. Let's see if that fits the Sanskrit. Yeah. Varnas cheme kramena grihyamana spotam vyanjayanti. Okay.
And it was simply refuted by the fact that why introduce an extra element? Phonemes themselves reveal the meaning.
Okay.
So that's okay.
That's basically it. That's how Jiva Goswami sums it up. A lot of fancy words, but that's what it amounts to. Okay. We can just move on to another topic or the next thing discussed. Tadevam varnarupanam eva veda shabdanam nityatvam arta pratyayakatvam changi kritam. And so it is acknowledged that the words of the Vedas, as made of phonemes, are eternal and express meaning. Okay? That's the conclusion. Having put aside the opposing views of some mimamsakas and then of the Spotavadis. Okay. Next we'll move on to something else. Tatra mukya lakshana gunabedena trida shabdavrittihi. In this regard, in what regard? Okay, in the regard of Vedas being eternal and expressing meaning. In this regard, there are three kinds of word meaning. Primary, figurative, and qualitative. We say qualitative here. Mukhya, lakshana, guna. Sometimes you see a division of Mukhya Lakshana, or it's called Abhida, literal meaning. Lakshana, figurative or metaphorical meaning. And then Vyanjana, or Dwani, suggested meaning. Now, we're not including this Vyanjana on this list. Vyanjana will be discussed by Jiva Goswami here a little bit later on. He's not including it in the initial list. He's going to add it on. And actually, lakshana and guna in classical poetic theory are two different kinds of lakshana. Lakshana, lakshana, and guna, lakshana. So it's just a subdivision. It's not really a different theory. It's just splitting it up differently. The lakshana here is split up into two separate categories, lakshana and guna. Okay? It's primary meaning and then two different kinds of secondary meaning. And the tertiary, or the third kind of meaning, will be dealt with a little later. And tatparya also comes in. It could be considered a fourth. These things will be explained right now, what these are. Mukhyapi, actually he doesn't explain it. I have to explain it in the commentary. He's just subdividing. Mukhyapi, Rudi Yoga Bedena Dvida. Rudi, Sarupena Jatya Gunena Va Nidesh Arhe Vastuni Sangya Sangi Sanketena Pravartate. Yata Dittat Gok Shuklaha. Okay, primary meaning, that's the first kind. Literal meaning, what a word means, what it says in the dictionary it means. Primary meaning, literal meaning. Primary meaning also has two divisions, conventional and derivational. It's called Rudi and Yoga. Rudi is conventional, yoga is by derivation. Just like you're studying, not yet, You studied Kridanta already? The older students have studied Kridanta. That's yoga. Derivation by pratyayas. Verb turns into a noun, noun turns into another noun. That's yoga or derivation. So, and then the other kind of meaning is rudi, convention. Tree is called taru. There's no verb that's derived from. Maybe the Donati Sutras or something. But it's just a word that conventionally means tree. Okay, so conventional meaning is an arbitrarily fixed relationship between name and named. Who fixes it? Yeah. Although, mortals can make up new words, at least proper names. If you're the father and you have a son, you can give him whatever name you want. So you can create, at least when you have a son, you can create a name for him. That's also Rudi. This boy, he's going to be called, you know, Rumpelstiltskin or whatever. That's your choice. So you're creating the conventional assignment that this person is called such and such. Or you write a book and you give a name to your book. So proper names you can create. There are other ones, the proper names that are in the Vedas, are not created by anybody. They're conventional, but nobody created them. But you can create more names. It's like scientists do that all the time. They make up terminologies. What's a quark? Now, someone made up the word quark. It means some physical thing, some black hole in space, whatever it is. Oh no, quark is a subatomic particle? Okay, anyway. But, you know, why does it have to be called a quark? Because some scientist whimsically decided to use that word. That's also conventional. It's a technical term created by a scientist. Yes, ma'am? From James Joyce? Okay. And then there was a Czechoslovakian science fiction writer in the 40s. He wrote something about these mechanical men and he called them robots. So he made up the word. That comes from robota, to work? Something like that. Conventional meaning is an arbitrarily fixed relationship between name and named, in which an object capable of being referred to is assigned a name. Okay, now if you have an object that can't be referred to, then you can't give it a name. Are there any such objects that can't be referred to? Is there anything that can't be given a name? Can't even be talked about? According to the Mayavadis, yes. The absolute truth can't really be talked about. But according to the realistic philosophy of the Nyaya school, astitvam gyayatvam abhideyatvam. If it exists, astitvam abhideyatvam. I'm sorry, gyayatvam, it can be known. If it exists, it should be knowable. And if it's knowable, you should be able to give it a name. Or abhida means a word, a literal meaning of some word. If it exists, this is the realistic or the Nyaya school. If it exists, you can know it and you can give it a name. No, he didn't say if it doesn't exist, you can't give it a name. You can make up names that refer to things that don't exist or are absurd. It's just, actually, you have two separate names that already exist, rabbit and horn, and you're just splicing them together. But you can have such an empty term that doesn't refer to anything, but you're not allowed to use it in a syllogism, in a logical presentation. You make an argument based on the use of empty terms, then you're disqualified from the argument. You've broken the rules. If a Buddhist tries to argue that God is unfair or he's impotent, then you can dismiss his argument because the word God for him doesn't refer to anything. So he's not allowed to say anything, propose anything about God. That's upasiddhanta. He's contradicting his own assumption that there is no reference to the word God. So he can't say about God is like this. He's not allowed to say that. Okay, so you can have empty terms, words that refer to nothing, but you can't use them in logical propositions, according to Nyaya philosophy. According to Western logic, modern logic, you can. And you can argue, and it's considered valid, that all square triangles are pink. You can make that argument. Or you can say they're green. And both arguments are valid. Because you don't have a square triangle that isn't pink. Therefore, your argument is valid. But in Nyaya philosophy, you're not allowed to talk such nonsense. That's why you have to have udaranam. All square triangles are pink, like the one in the kitchen. But if he can't give an example, a positive or negative example, all square triangles are pink, unlike the green square triangle in the kitchen, that's a negative example. You have to be able to give either a positive or a negative example, otherwise the argument isn't complete. So Nyaya philosophy, by demanding an example, positive or negative, is insisting you're talking about, you use words that actually refer to something. Or that your logic is concrete. It's not just, word jugglery. Okay, that was a diversion. I'll read the sentence again. I didn't even finish the sentence. Conventional meaning is an arbitrarily fixed relationship between name and named, in which an object capable of being referred to is assigned a name that represents either the object's essence, a category to which it belongs, or a quality it has. Okay, there is some idea behind the assignment. It's either you're expressing the essence of the thing, the category to which it belongs. Like, look at that cow. You're using the word cow to assign this creature over there to the category cow. Look at this thing that has cowness. So that word cow is assigning the object to a category. Or look at that brown one. Looking at all the cows and you say, look at that brown one. Then you're assigning a quality by the word brown. Or you call the cow by name, then you're talking about its essence, its identity. Are we talking sarupa? Is that the word here? Sarupena. Maybe I should say something other than essence. How about unique identity? I'm going to change it right now. Anybody not like that instead of essence? What's an essence anyway? It's a solution of some taste in alcohol. Essences are very vague. Unique identity, because we're talking about something's name. Like Subhadra, this particular cow. We're not talking about the essence of Subhadra-ness. We're talking about this particular cow. Okay, unique Unique identity. Swarupa. Okay. Now I have to make a note to Jayadevara Maharaj. Sorry, hold on a second. I have to make a note. It involves English change, so I have to check with Jayadevara Maharaj. Check with... Okay. So, conventional meaning is assigning a name to something that represents either the object's unique identity, a category to which it belongs, or a quality it has. Examples are the words ditta, a person's name. Cow, naming the category of cowness, and white, quality, respectively. Yeah. Let me just read the commentary. It's one sentence. These varieties of meaning have been explained by the writers on the theory of poetry, Alankar Shastra. Okay, that's the commentary.
I just seeing a comment here in the document that we need a word here that means something to the reader that is either English or a Sanskrit word for this word, ditta. This, the word ditta.
Yeah.
I came across, I had this in Harinamrita Vikarna also, and I saw Moni Williams' first explanation about some kind of a man who's like this and like that. An intelligent man who's expert in this and that. But when I was doing some research on the Inadi Sutras, there was some discussion about how you can't make every word from an Inadi Sutra, and this was given, ditta was given as an example.
A word that can't be derived according to an Anadi
Sutra. Yeah, how it would just be too ridiculous to try and do it from an Anadi Sutra.
So there's no yoga. There's no derivation.
But they gave the meaning of it. So it's a wooden toy elephant.
A wooden toy?
A wooden toy elephant. Yeah. And a davita is a wooden toy... Because ditta and davita are both given as examples. And davita is...
But if ditta means not a person's name... And it's a it's supposed to be Sarupa. It's an example of Sarupa.
Yeah.
If ditta meant a wooden toy elephant,
Why
isn't that a subcategory of elephant? Why it's not a unique individual.
It is. It's a unique object. Just like candles, a unique object, or wooden toy elephants.
If you assume that the word refers not just to jati but to vyakti.
Yeah.
And you can, and many say that words describe both jati and vyakti and guna, all three.
Well, yeah, it seems like Jiva Goswami's first example, ditta, is an example of a dravya, gal is an example of a jati, and shukla is an example of a guna.
Jiva Goswami, here.
Yeah, ditta, gal, shukla, one's a dravya, one's a jati, one's a guna.
But cow's a dravya.
What's
the difference? A toy elephant is a substance and a cow's not?
Well, like a cow could be a jati or a dravya. It depends if you're looking at the jati or the vyakti.
Okay. If you said elephant, that would be a jati. But toy elephant?
Like elephant's not a jati because it's not that there's the same wooden toy elephant. I don't know if there is wooden toy elephant.
What do you have there is an intersection of three jatis. Yeah. Not that the jatis are overlapping. Yeah, they are overlapping. You've got things that possess woodness, things that possess toyness, and things that possess cowness. And those categories, those jatis, overlap.
Yeah.
You can't have jatis that are... you're not supposed to have jatis that are... No, you do. Anyway, you can't have overlapping jatis. And so you have a set, not just one, a set of many things that fit that belong to all three categories. And those are the wooden toy elephants.
Yeah,
but is that Swarupa? Because why does it refer to just one of them unless that's his name?
Well, it's like you can have a wooden ball, you could have a wooden this or wooden, it's a thing which has its own unique identity. Like it's a wooden toy elephant.
So is a cow. Huh? So is a cow.
And so what?
A cow. A cow is a thing that possesses cowness.
Yeah.
A cow is a substance that possesses a dravya that possesses. The jati Gotvam. Yeah. So you're just talking about another dravya that possesses three jatis.
Well, yeah, you could do that. You could call it one thing, or you could call it one thing as many things. I could look at that rubber over there, the board rubber. I could say it's got woodness, it's got clothness, and it's got a mix of different things in there. But
most real things.
But it's one object.
Real things, because the real things most often do belong to more than one jati.
Yeah, right.
But I still don't see the difference between the ditta and the cow, if ditta just means a wood elephant, toy elephant. Anyway, I'm going to make a note about this.
Yeah, sure.
And we'll pursue, I'll have to ask.
Yeah, anyway, just to make the point that this book on Anadi Sutras, they clearly gave the meaning like of ditta and davita as, ditta was wooden toy elephant, davita was wooden toy deer.
Anadi Sutras?
Yeah.
But then they gave a derivation.
No, they gave these words
as examples, words that can't be divided.
Yeah, they even gave a way that you could possibly do it, but it was so ridiculous, they just gave it to show how ridiculous it would be if you tried
to. So the Nadi Sutras themselves are saying that you can't try to derive all the words.
Yeah, well, the person who wrote an article about the Nadi
commentary.
Sutras, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What about the opinion that ditta is somebody's name? It's not just Monia Williams is saying that.
Such a fixed, like the word gahal, it will always refer to a cow.
Go will always refer to a cow. May refer to a wooden toy cow that's not really a cow.
Yeah, but the word ditta, there may be two dittas, persons named ditta on the planet at the same time. So the word ditta as a name doesn't necessarily have such a strong. And then 50 years later, some other individual may have the name ditta. So it doesn't conventionally refer to one dravya so well as the word gal, cow does, for example. But a wooden toy elephant is always a wooden toy elephant.
Okay. Unless it's imitation wood and it's really made out of plastic.
Yeah. It's for Kali Yuga.
Okay, I wanted to think about this and talk about it more, but I think we drop it for now. Yes. Where does he get that from? But that's also a kind of man. It's not any particular man.
If it's so well defined, a particular man who is dark complexion, very learned and all.
Well, yes, have a dark complexion also. Yeah, but it's not unique. It's not just one person.
No, but we're talking about Swarupa as. Yeah, it's there. Yeah, I know. I see it. Yeah.
Anyway, this topic is discussed in the Alankar Shastra, so I can research in there. What do they mean by Sarupa? Yes.
A question about what we've discussed about primary meanings. So they say whatever is known could be named and all names refer to particular things.
No, names. Notice that the word Sangha is used here. All three of these kinds of references are names. There's proper names and common nouns are also names. The name of cowness is not individuals only. It can be name of a quality, the name of a category, or the name of an individual.
But at Navanyaya, how do they take...
This is old Nyaya.
How do they take the word nothing? Does it refer to any particular thing or not?
A nothing is a kind of absence.
But does it refer to...
They define not only nothings, but somethings. Everything is defined in terms of absences in Navya-nyaya. Like, something is the absence of nothing. And and nothing is a complete absence of anything. It's all defined in terms of abhava. But there's different kinds of abhava. There's previous abhava, like before 1950 there wasn't any me. And then there's a subsequent abhava, you know, after such and such a year I won't be here either. And there's mutual abhava, you know, I'm not that mridanga. You know, there's a mutual absence of mridanganess in me and meanness in the mridanga.
But that,
anyway, different kinds of abhava. And there's adyanta abhava. There's no rabbit horn anywhere, at any time.
How do they classify abhava itself? Is it a quality? Because if it's a quality...
Which? Abhava? Abhava is one of the seven categories of Vaisheshika. Mm-hmm. One of the seven categories of reality. Originally they had only six. But when they started getting sophisticated, they added abhava as a separate category of reality. Not existence, because it doesn't exist. It's just postulated as a category of reality, abhava. And you need that. The Navinaya needs the category of abhava in order to explain things. A cow is defined as the absence of hoarseness. Yeah, a cow is not a horse. We define cow in such a way as to distinguish it from everything else. So you're just defining it in terms of abhavas. A cow is a creature with four legs, not three, not five. So a cow has absence of three legs, and absence of five legs, and absence of two legs, and absence of 1,000 legs. A lot of absence. A cow is made up of a lot of absences.
So in other words, this abhava cannot be classified either as a quality or as a substance,
because these are different categories.
Just entirely different
substance, quality, action, jati category. These are all separate, seven different realms of existence, and the seventh one is abhava. It's not. It's different from all the other six. You have a headache, I'll give you an aspirin, and you'll experience for yourself what is the absence of a headache. It's just to be experienced. You have to just assume it as an element of analysis. You know what it's like to feel hungry. You know what it's like to be rid of your hunger. So you just have to know, but from direct experience, what an absence is.
And then it becomes a kind of misnomer, because absence of headache is not a thing in itself, it's just the presence of my normal state.
It's not a thing. It's not a dravya. It's an absence. Right. But it is in a sense a thing. But it's a different kind of thing. It's an absence. Absence makes the heart fonder, so it has effect. If it wasn't anything, then it wouldn't have any effect. But absences do have effects.
They may explain absence as a cause only because they don't explain something else as a positive cause of that fonderness of heart, for instance, or my happiness when I'm...
Well, you can talk absence in terms of cause and effect, but you don't have to. Even in static situations where nothing's happening, you have to deal with absences. Like even, you know, when you talk about cause and effect, I'm sorry, I'll get to you, but I might as well just deal with this. When you talk about cause and effect, you're dealing in time. Before, the cause was there, but the effect wasn't. Afterwards, the effect is there. So to talk cause and effect, you have to be dealing in the motion of time, past and future. But you can talk about absences just at a given moment of time. Right now, right here, there's an absence of a clay pot right here, because there isn't any. There's no clay pot in front of me. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to talk in terms of cause and effect or time. At any given moment, at this moment, there's an absence right here. At this place in time, there's an absence of clay pot. Okay. Did you understand? We're way off track. Okay, we'll get back to it. You want to help us get further off track? Yeah.
Absence, if you define everything in terms of absence, then the definition becomes more complicated and it goes into a very deep pool of infinite descriptions of absences. Whereas if we clearly point out the presence of something, some attributes, then it is limited. Whereas the absence is unlimited realm, isn't it? Because you will have to explain all possible absences. I mean, if you miss even one, then we can say, oh, you missed that, so cow is that, like that you can say.
Modern linguists understand that words mean something. The meaning of words is best analyzed in terms of absences or in terms of oppositions. Male is not female. Female is not male. You know, voiced and unvoiced is all defined in terms of oppositions or absences. So you may naively say, let's just talk positively. I don't like to talk negatively. It's too complicated and it's depressing to talk negatively. But when you get scientific, the scientists are really talking in terms of absences. Whether it's pleasant or not, that's the more, according to Navanyaya, that's the more exact way to describe things. You define something, define means to put a fence around something. So to put a fence around it, you have to determine what it isn't. Otherwise a cow can mean everything and anything. But you define it so that you know what a cow isn't. There are lots of cows, and it can be any one of all the cows in the world, but it's not a horse and not a pig. So it is, scientifically, the definition should be in terms of, it really should be in terms of absences or negations. Last question, then we go back to the topic.
It's about the text here?
About the text, yeah.
Yeah, it says there's three kinds of words, the three kinds of word meaning.
Word meaning.
Mukhya, Lakshana, Guna.
Yeah.
And then when it defines Mukhya, it
subdivides it into two kinds.
Into three kinds.
No, Rudi and Yoga. Dvida.
Oh, yeah, okay. Rudi and Yoga. And then in the conventional, it says
Sarupa,
Jati, and Guda, and Guna.
Okay,
Guna comes again.
That's okay. Using the word Guna in a different sense. What you usually see, it's usually called gauna or gauni, not guna. A guna is a guna, is a quality. And gauni is qualitative literal meaning. It's literal meaning that's connected with a quality. That's why it's called, but it's better to make it adjective, gauni, gauna. Yeah. Yeah, make it vritti, gauna. But Jiva Goswami said guna, that's okay. All right, now we go back to where what Jiva Goswami was saying. Lakshana, okay, he talked about mukhya, literal meaning. Now he's talking about lakshana, figurative meaning. Second kind of meaning. Lakshana tenaiva sanketen abhihitartha sambandini. Figurative meaning has some connection with the meaning assigned by conventional usage. Okay. Yata Gangayam Goshaha. As an example, a cowherd village on the Ganga. What's wrong with that? Why can't that just be taken literally? Why? Yeah, or the houses, they'll sink. Yes. Yes? On the Ganga. Well, Gangayam. Well, if you're really talking about an underwater city in the river, okay, then it would be literal. But it's not the way, that's not the intention of the speaker. People say, you know, meet me at the cowherd village on the Ganga. They're not saying, you know, put on your scuba diving, and meet me under the water. That's not what it means. Okay. Iyam punas trida. Okay, now we subdivide. Iyam punas trida. Ajahat swarta, jahat swarta, jahat ajahat swarta cha. What does jahat mean? What form is that? Present participle. It's a neuter present because it's a
Jahwadi, therefore it doesn't get unt, it's just T without the N. Okay. Jahat, not Jahant, but Jahat. Giving it up. Giving up what? Swartha. Giving up its own meaning. Or not giving up. Ajahat Swartha. Not giving up its own meaning, giving up its own meaning, and giving up and also not giving up its own meaning. Those are the three subcategories. Well, okay, what does that mean? Let me translate that one sentence. Figurative meaning is also of three kinds. That which does not give up its own meaning, that which does give it up, and that which both does and does not. I guess there's no fourth category that neither gives up its meaning nor doesn't give it up. They don't. No. Yata, or here, examples. We can understand that from the examples. Yata shweto davatiti gangayam gosha soyam devadatta iti. Examples of these respectively are, the white is running. There is a cowherd village on the Ganga, and this is that devadatta. Okay, can I explain that? Although I think it's being explained in the commentary, but let me give you a quick explanation. White is a color. It doesn't run. It doesn't have legs. The white horse has legs, but we're calling it a white. So that's the literal meaning of white is being put aside, given up. Instead, we mean a horse that happens to have the white color. So there it's Jahat Swartha. Then we say there is a cowherd village on the Ganga. Let's see, it is a village. We're not giving up the idea of a village, but we got some strange location of it that can't be taken literally. So that's Ajahat Swartha, is that right? No, but the order is Ajahat Swartha first. Okay, sorry, why don't we leave the explanation for the commentary? I blew that. Okay, anyway, the examples are, the example of a lakshana that doesn't give up its original meaning, its literal meaning, is the white is running. Because it is white. There's a cowherd village on the Ganga. Well, it's not literally on the Ganga. It's not on top of the river. So the literal meaning has to be rejected. Literal meaning of white is fine. It's a horse, but the white, the color is, the horse runs, and the color inside the horse is running too. But the Ganga can't be, the village can't be on top of the Ganga. So, there the literal meaning has to be put aside. It can't be taken literally. Now we say, this is that Devadatta. We have two different pronouns there. This and that. What does this refer to? Don't they both refer to the same Devadatta? This is that Devadatta. Why do I have two different pronouns? One of them proximate and one of them distant. It's not that there's one Devadatta 2 feet away and another one 10 feet away. There's only one Devadatta and he's in the same place. Why two different pronouns? Yes? I mean a different Devadatta. There was Devadatta Sharma and now there's Devadatta, you know, somebody else from another family. Two different Devadattas? Same Devadatta? But what's the difference?
They must have been speaking about some Devadatta here.
Yes.
And then as they are speaking, then this person whom they are speaking about, that Devadatta happens to come.
Okay, now what's the difference between those two Devadattas?
That's not
one of them is this Devadatta. No, one is close and the other one is distant.
Yeah, the difference is that...
The distance is it in space?
No.
What is it in? How do you measure the difference? Time. It's a difference not in space, but in time. There was the Devadatta yesterday and the Devadatta today. They're actually the same person, but one of them was Devadatta yesterday and the other one, that's that Devadatta. And the Devadatta right in front of me is this Devadatta. And I'm saying, this one is that one, it's the same person. But the difference is the difference in time. Yes?
75 years ago, and now he's an old man, but at that time it was a small boy. But that's the same Devadatta.
Could be. So that depends on the context.
Then the difference will be
This old man is that little boy I had on my lap.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe we'll go.
Oh, okay. This is today's Devadatta. It's not yesterday's Devadatta. This Devadatta is literal, is to be taken literally. But that Devadatta isn't there anymore. Yesterday's Devadatta. I think you're giving up. You're giving the difference is not to be taken literally, because he's right here. He's right here right now. So that the absent or the distant Devadatta is not absent and distant. He's right here. So you're giving up the literal meaning of that. That means distant in time. But he's right here right now. So literally he's here. Figuratively he's past. But he's not past, he's still here. So he's literally here and he's figuratively in the past. So you're giving up the literal meaning of that Devadatta. It's not a different Devadatta. If you say this and that, give me this apple, not that one, then you're literally saying, you're distinguishing two different apples. But now we're talking about this Devadatta and that Devadatta. It's not two different Devadattas. So the idea of a different Devadatta, that's not to be taken literally. It's just the same person yesterday. Yes? Like I'm juggling apples, and you think I have two different apples, and you ask which one, you choose one of them, but it's the same apple. Then you're being tricked. Yes?
One possible way of looking at this Gangayam Gosha can be like...
but don't get off track. Go ahead.
There can be an underground tributary of Ganga flowing somewhere.
Okay, but it's not the intention. It's not the intention. Let's stick to. I mean, we could construe things in a way that would make it literal. The same expression could be literal in a certain context. But it's not the point being made here. I mean, words. The same words can be used literally in a certain context, and the same words in another context have to be taken figuratively. But here we're exploring what it means to be figurative. Okay? It's not that there's no such thing as figurative usage. You can't speak for 3 minutes without saying something figurative. You can't speak even one or two sentences, usually, without saying something figurative. You can't use real languages all the time exactly literally. Not in the real world. You're always saying something metaphorical. You know? You know, you just, especially if you're vulgar and you call people jackasses and things like that, you know, then you're talking figuratively. He's not literally a donkey, but you're calling him a donkey. And people who are vulgar are always using such metaphors. But even people who are cultured, they use, you know, polite metaphors. You can't avoid them. So let's find out what it means to be figurative, because it's a fact of life. Okay. Continuing. Sri Ramanujadi bis tu antya namanyante tattu tadgranteshu anveshtavyam. Some authorities, including Sri Ramanuja, do not accept the last of these, but that may be studied in their books. Okay, the Sri Vaishnavas, they don't accept the category, subcategory of jahat as ajahat. Of For them, they just don't like the idea of being both literal and not literal, or giving up and not giving up its meaning. They like to understand this is that Devadatta in a different way. They have a different way, prefer a different way of analyzing it. And Jiva Goswami says, let's not bother with that now. You can read their books if you want to find out about it. Where it's relevant is the analysis of the statement, Tat Tvamasi, you are that. How do you understand that properly? Mayavadis, you know, are trying to drag us all to hell by giving us a wrong interpretation of you are that. The Vaishnavas try to analyze it. It's a statement of the Upanishads. It must be accepted, but it should be understood properly. So many Vaishnavas explain it as a jahat ajahat swartha lakshana. That you are that, but not literally. There is a difference between you and that. There's an equivalence, but it's not absolute sameness. So the you is You are you, but you're not God. But you're part of God, or you're servant of God, or you're derived from God. But the Sri Vaishnavas, they don't like that way of explaining it. They have some other way of explaining it, what Tattvamasi means. Oh, let's stick to the topic. Hold it to the end. We're almost at the end. Let's finish this paragraph at least. Okay, actually he says, sa iti padena. Okay, he gives a brief. He says, okay, look at their books if you want to get into it. But then he gives one sentence, giving a quick idea of what their theory is. Sa iti padena tatkala anubhuta uchite ayamiti da idanim anubhuyamana uchite atra dvaryor anvaye viroda eva nasti katam lakshana syad iti sankshepaha. So the Sri Vaishnavas are arguing, why do you have to say that there's figurative usage? Why can't it be understood literally? And they say, their argument in brief, in the statement, this is that Devadatta, the word that indicates what was experienced before. And this describes what is being experienced now. Since nothing here stops these two words from being connected in a sentence, why does there have to be a figurative usage? They just say, what's the problem? You can refer to the same person as this and that, literally. Yesterday he was, you know, as referred to, as what he was yesterday, you can call him that. And what he is right now, you can call him this, but it's still the same person. So why not just accept it as literal? I mean, that's what the Sri Vaishnavas say in effect. Let me read the commentary and see. Yeah, it's short. And then we can say whatever you want. But let me read the commentary. In the phrase, the white is running, Shweto Davati. Shweta is originally an adjective, but is figuratively used as a noun, meaning white horse. Modern readers who might not refer to a white horse that way could think of an example from chess. White played a good game. You know, you have the players in chess are called white and black. Because the idea of white is not abandoned. Not abandoned. This lakshana is a jahat swarta. The idea of white is still there. You don't have to give it up. That's not contradicted. In which a word does not give up its own meaning. The phrase, there is a cowherd village on the Ganga, is an example of jahat swarta, in which the original meaning of a word is abandoned. A village cannot actually stand in the river. Thus the word Ganga must refer to something else. The village is not in or on the Ganga. So Ganga doesn't mean literally Ganga. In this case, it means the shore of the river. On the Ganga means on the shore that's next to the Ganga. This is that Devadatta. There are two pronouns. Saha, that one seen before, and ayam, this one seen now. Actually, the reference is to Devadatta's being seen now. The literal reference is to now. When I say today, this is that Devadatta, I'm talking about the Devadatta today. This refers to the one right here. I can't say that yesterday. I couldn't have said that yesterday. I could have, but then refer to the day before that. But I can't refer to, I'm not referring to the Devadatta in the future. I'm talking about that refers to the past and that this refers to the present. The present is literal. The past is gone. Actually, the reference is to Devadatta's being seen now. And thus, Saha, that, the distant one, abandons its literal meaning. But Ayam does not. And so we have an example of Jahat Ajahat Swarta. Both abandoning and not abandoning the original meaning. Because one of the words abandons and the other one doesn't. It's not that one word both abandons and doesn't abandon. That's ridiculous. But you have two different words. Okay, now. What did you want to discuss? Anything? 5 minutes. Yes.
Looks like it's a bit ambiguous what gives up its meaning. It's either the word Ganga itself abandons meaning, or the Vishnu Bhakti which pastes onto the Ganga, because Ganga may retain the original meaning, but Vishnu Bhakti means something else in this context.
Which Vishnu Bhakti?
Well, here it's Saptami Ekavachanam for feminine. So in other words, rather than taking Vishnu Bhakti in its literal meaning, we take it as a...
Well, just like Panini, he doesn't really discuss meaning until you form a Pratipadika, right?
Oh, I see.
You combine a prakriti with its pratyas. You don't, you know, the word without any inflection has some sort of meaning, but the actual, you don't really use words until you inflect them. You have to have a siddhapada, a word that's, the inflection is finished. Although you can talk about the meaning of the pratyaya, the meaning of the root, but that's not real sentence, that kind of meaning isn't used in real sentences. In a real sentence, in real language, you have to put the two together. You don't separate them.
Are we probably run into
so we're talking about the word Ganga with its inflection. Uh-huh. We're not splitting them up. That's just grammatical theory, but that's a fiction. Real life, you don't use pratyas and roots separately. You don't use a root without a pratyaya, you don't use a pratyaya without a root, normally. Unless you're talking some strange language.
Or perhaps...
You're talking grammar. If you're talking about grammar, then you can split them up. But in regular usage, you don't split them up.
Yeah, well, perhaps we may meaningfully talk about English language, for instance, because there the idea of on the Ganges, Saptami, is conveyed by the on the Ganges, and so on takes a separate meaning, or different meaning, whereas Ganga retains its original meaning.
Well, I guess we are splitting it up here. We are talking about Ganga and we're talking about on, but it's on what it's actually on. What the village is on something. It's not floating in outer space. It's on the bank. It's on the shore. So the on is literal, but it's a different location. There is a relationship of on, but it's on a different location, on the shore. So on is literal, but it's not literally Ganga. It's shore of Ganga.
Or it could mean next, on could mean next, next to Ganga.
Okay, it's just an alternate interpretation. Yeah, you could take it either way. And in the real sentence, they're connected anyway. They're not split up. The word is Gangayam. Root plus inflection together. So you got the word in the sentence, Gangayam, and it doesn't make sense literally. So it's a problem with the word. You don't have to stick a pin in the word and dissect it. Just deal with the word.
I have a question about the Jahata, Jahat Svartha. As Prabhupada explains to Tamasin in Bhagavad Gita, saying that you, Krishna, are that absolute...
That you refer to Krishna?
Yes, he refers it to Krishna, not to the person... Not to the jiva. So in this case, will there still be a jahada jahat svartha, or it will be just...
No, that would be a different interpretation. You are that. Well, you could say, you, Krishna, my friend, are the Supreme Absolute Truth. Those are two different conceptions. Krishna as the Absolute Truth, and Krishna as your friend. So you could take that in that way as a jahat svartha. That's not the usual interpretation, though. You see in commentaries, because the context of the Upanishad, Shvetaketu's father is talking to him, not to Krishna. So he's saying, you Shvetaketu are that. Shvetaketu. Yes, ma'am.
Because the interpretation of the Sri Vaishnava was there, do we know any idea of where he is taking that different interpretation of the third Lakshana?
Sri Vaishnava, you could look in the, I don't remember exactly, you could look in the Vedarta Sangraha of Ramanujacharya. There might be something there. I'm almost sure there's something there about it, about Tattvamasi. Get a copy of Vedarta Sangraha. We used to have one in the library. And look for the phrase Tattvamasi and then probably find the explanation there. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.